broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. This is Matt Sorensen. I'm going to go with an NPR voice for today's episode.
Oh, yeah. People are driving. Do not do that.
It's soothing.
You might be responsible for killing someone.
Yeah. It's very soothing. But hey, I am just excited to be back. I've been a little MIA on the radio show, been a little spotty, but I'm going to be back in the groove with my man, my partner and co-host here, Mark J. Kohler. Super excited to be doing the show again together.
Yeah, glad you're back. So yeah, had to cover for you last week. We did our disaster planning show, very timely with Harvey and Irma and Jose and Juan and Billy and Bobby. I mean, geez, yeah. Gosh, we live in a crazy world. There's like, you know what I wondered is why they don't name forest fires. I mean, they name hurricanes.
Good point.
They should name a fire.
I agree with that. But they should, when they're naming stuff, I mean, Harvey, Irma, I don't know. Like, it should be like, you know, Megatron 10,000. You know, it should like strike fear in you.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Uncle Harvey's coming by.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I know. And I don't want to get in trouble here saying someone's name sounds more dangerous than another, but.
That's why I wear Megatron. He's pretend Mark.
I don't know any guys named Megatron, but you know, the thing with forest fires, I just came up with this. I didn't even prep this topic. It just came to me. But you know, if you named forest fires, mm-hmm. you know, the problem is you'd probably want to name the forest fire after the doofus that started the fire. So you'd have Herb, you know.
True enough.
Cletus started a fire.
True enough. But then you'd get some idiot, you know, trying to get some notoriety out there, you know. He's, oh, I got that. Yeah, that's me. That one's me. Yeah. I got my name on it.
Some arsonist dream. I want a forest fire named after me.
Well,
that's probably the problem. Yeah. We zeroed on it. Okay, show's a wrap. There you go.
Well, we hope to solve some of your real problems in the world or give you something, you know, that you can actually use in your life, maybe about protecting your assets, saving taxes, building wealth.
Today we've actually got
a good topic. Yeah, right. Okay. We're going to hit one of those three.
I thought this was just our hour. We could BS and, you know, someone might listen. But
it's a give and take. You know, we got to give both of those things. No one wants to hear just the tax and legal stuff.
This is the only hour where I'm not billing someone. So, you know, they're not watching their pocketbook. So they're like, well, I'm driving down the road. I'm not paying for this. Yeah. So I'll just listen.
Exactly. I don't care what you think about whether forest fires are named or not. That is absolutely worthless.
Yeah.
Well, what are we talking about, Mark? Did we think of something?
Yeah, this is going to be a great show today. We're talking about intellectual property, trademarks. Where does it fit into the whole equation? Because, folks, you're not just building a customer list or a cool brand. You might have some IP. That's intellectual property. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of
being all cool there with the IP. I see.
Yeah, I didn't have any other.
To those in the know, it's intellectual property.
Yeah. For you and us on this show, in a very private conversation now, we're going to talk about IP. But anyway, we got a special lawyer coming on the show here that will be kind of an expert on the topic. So we hope to.
Yeah, we got Jaron Burgesson from our office. He is the guy in our office that does the trademarks when clients need him. And there's some other parts to intellectual property to think about. We'll talk a lot about trademarks today. I think that's the one for most business owners that they're going to use to protect their brand. Also, you know, just keep in mind with the Refresh Your Wealth show, we want you to share with friends, but only do so with the express permission of Mark J. Kohler Inc. and Matt Sorensen Inc. So just want to get that disclaimer out there since we're on topic.
That's right. Creating intellectual property here. Well, thank you everybody for listening. We do want to keep this fun and entertaining. Both Matt and I are attorneys. I'm also a CPA. We have a law firm and accounting firm helping clients around the country. And we started this show primarily because we thought, you know, it might be fun to discuss the topics that we cover in our consultations every day with clients. And so this show has really evolved. It's now over 10 years running every week. And we've covered so many different topics, and of course some repeatedly, but with updates and changes and twists and case law. And so we want to thank all of you for listening and sharing this show with your friends and partners and business associates, family, making your kids watch it or listen to it when they're grounded. That's always one of my kids' favorites.
Write a report on last week's.
I'll do anything. Just don't make me listen to your radio show while I'm grounded, please. I mean, I'll go mow the lawn. I'll shovel dirt, but
you know, one of my best friends growing up, his dad's punishment when he got in trouble, he said, "I need you to go rotate the tires on the car." It's actually a truck, okay? Huh. And he had one jack, so he had to go like one at a time. I don't know how the heck he did it. He like put a block under and then went to the next one. It took him forever. He comes back in. He's like, "All right, Dad, I did it." He says, "Go rotate them back."
That's funny. So you can – I didn't know you could do that yourself. I was just – I just kind of thought that was something.
Well, you got one jack and a cinder block. You just make your way around the car. Eventually you got them rotated, I guess. I don't know.
I guess, yeah.
My parents luckily weren't that nuts, so –
Well, Jiffy Lube just lost another customer.
That's right.
I've got a 13-year-old daughter. This is right up her alley. So I'm going to hook her up.
There's a good tip for you guys right there. Just, you know, parental tip right there.
Hey, and if it's a business vehicle, when you pay your kids to rotate the car tires on the business vehicle, that's a tax write-off, baby. Look at that. We just came up with another – not only have your kids clean the office, shred paper – work on QuickBooks in your office, they can be rotating the tires on the business vehicle.
Yep.
Bam. Matt, you didn't even know you were on a tax topic right there.
Just walked into that.
And there's your tax tip for the week.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm gonna give a legal tip. Are you doing a tax tip today?
I am. I'm giving a real tax tip, but they're getting a twofer right there with the kids rotating the business vehicle. Yeah. Tires. Yeah, that's a big one. Okay, do you want to go with legal tip first?
Yeah, let's hit the legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right, well, for today's legal tip, I want to talk about when you need to register your business into another state. Okay? Mm-hmm. Many clients will come to us and they're operating in one state or maybe they're selling product online and they got a kind of a home office, but they're selling stuff all over. Or maybe you're growing offices in multiple states. Maybe it's real estate. You got properties in multiple states. When do I need to go move my company, whether it's an LLC or a corporation, when do I need to go register it into another state? So I've got a blog article on this on my website, by the way, if you want the details, sdrehandbook.com. Just search foreign registration. That's what it's called. If I've got a company in Arizona, let's say, and I want to start doing business in California, I have to file a foreign registration into California to be qualified to do business there. Now, when do I have to do it? That's the question, okay? Because obviously, if you're going to do business there, what happens, there's a certain level where the states are going to say you must register here. And in most states, they determine doing business in the state. When are you doing business in the state? If I just got an online store and I'm selling products and I'm shipping into California, I'm not going to need to go register my product or register my company into California. It's just because I have a customer there doesn't mean I got to go register the whole business there necessarily. Now, if I open up an office, I start getting employees, I'm building a presence there, now I'm going to need to register foreign into that state. Or if I'm a real estate business, I buy a property in California, I'm going to need to register my, let's say, Arizona LLC into California. So once you establish a presence, either with property, people, or other assets, then you're going to need to make that foreign registration into the other state. So until then, you can likely get away with it. Registering, it may not be required. Sometimes there's perks to being there. Like, for example, if you got a lawsuit in another state and you're not registered there, you're typically need to register in that state, so that state court will recognize you in that lawsuit. But the main issue is going to be, again, you got people there, property or other assets there. If you do, you're almost always going to have to register foreign.
Yeah. And if I may piggyback a little bit, Matt, and just say, I think the biggest issue is really asset protection, because if there is a lawsuit in that state with a customer, vendor, location, store, rental property, whatever it is, if you're not registered there, you're personally liable. So that's the big issue. Now, taxes, we're going to have to maybe file a tax return in that example of yours in California. Even if I don't register my company there and I have a presence, I may have a presence enough to file a tax return, but it doesn't mean I'm registering my entity there. So, folks, this is one where if you are crossing state lines, I think you should be talking to your lawyer and your accountant, find out what you should be doing for tax reporting and asset protection.
Yeah.
And that's where a review with our office once a year, just get on the phone. Our tax lawyers can help.
Yeah. And on that liability issue too, and this is in the blog article, there's some more detail on this, is there are states and their state statutes that say, if you haven't registered here, we don't recognize you. And as Mark's saying, that means you're not getting the liability protection of your entity in that state. Also, there are states that will fine you for failure to register in the state when you should have. So you could be getting a fine from the state saying you should have filed here months or years ago. And so there can be a financial penalty for failure to register as well.
Yeah, and this is, I know this drives some of you folks crazy. I'll just pick on you, Matt, in your Maricopa County, the home of the hot dog tacos. I still have
Taco
yet to have
dog.
One.
Taco dog.
Okay. Taco dog. See, I don't even know the
hot
the
dog
local
tacos.
Acronym.
Jeez. Yeah.
Well, it's a taco with a hot dog instead of beef or chicken, whatever.
And we okay, don't but anyway. Call it burger hams, okay?
Yeah, there's no ham on my burger. Anyway, so in Maricopa County, when you have a rental property, you've got to file a special tax return for your rental property in that county, even if you don't live in Arizona. Even if your LLC is registered in Arizona, there's this extra form for taxes for having a rental property. So again, when you're going and doing business in these other counties and states around the country, just realize you're dipping your toe into someone else's backyard, and they want to know what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
So this is where a little bit of planning.
Yeah.
Ounce of prevention.
Yep.
Ounce of prevention. There you go.
Okay.
Just throwing it out there. All right. You ready for a tax tip? Oh, and Matt, I got to tell you this. This was the consultation I was waiting for. So for all of you Fletch fans out there, now I know when I start quoting Fletch, some of you just say, well, you just lost all credibility with me. But we quote a few movies around here. We have a movie required watching list in order to better enjoy the show. Fletch is on that list. And I had a client with the last name Poon. Now, for those that are Fletch fans, this is what you've been waiting for your whole career, is to have someone walk in and go, hi, my name's so-and-so Poon. And if you're a fan, of course, I wanted to say, what kind of name is Poon anyway? But in my first consultation, I couldn't do it because
wasn't the way to start out the call.
No, they're just paying hundreds of dollars per hour for some great advice.
You should start out. Now, you've seen Fletch, right? Right? you've seen Fletch.
No, because then you ruin it. You ruin it. There's a setup to this. So anyway, in my first consultation, I didn't ask the question because I wanted to keep, my credibility and do a great job as their attorney accountant. So anyway, in my second consult though, it was just this week. And so I was on the phone with her and I said, so what kind of name is Poon anyway? And she kind of paused like, why are you asking that? And she goes, it's Chinese, it's, I go, oh, okay. Well, and I left it there. I thought I didn't want to bring up Fletch. I had my chance. If she was a Fletch watcher, she would have said it's Comanche Indian. But she didn't. If she had, I would have lost it right there. I would have been rolling over. So if any of you have the last name Poon and you become a client of mine, I will be asking you that. And I better get proper answer, Comanche Indian.
This is good enough. Long story short, your joke flopped.
It did, but I enjoyed
just
it.
Just sailed
immensely.
Over. Just boom.
And she may be a listener of our show. And of course, I didn't violate any attorney-client privilege there. And I appreciate her. She's a great client. We're doing some good stuff. But I just, at her expense, I was enjoying a little Fletch moment. So
now she knows where the heck that came from.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, let's get to another tax tip.
All right.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Well, my tax tip is going to be about the YouTube video I just shot this week. So if any of you are watching YouTube regularly, I highly recommend that you subscribe to my YouTube channel. I shoot usually 1 to 2, 3 videos a month on different tax and legal topics. They're very helpful. They're kind of fun. Sometimes it's a different method of learning rather than a radio show or a book. Yeah. Watching a video can be helpful for
and
some
guys,
of you.
Guys, just, you know, I mean, you may not know this, but Mark, he's just, he doesn't have a face for radio. I mean, he's a notch above. I mean, you see this guy on YouTube?
Wow.
Man.
It's amazing what CGI
like
will do.
I mean, he's looking good.
Well, thank you, Matt. I moisturize. I tan. You know, those are important things.
Clearly.
Anyway, so my YouTube video this week was on passive losses and rental real estate. Now, as many of you know, we talk about the power of rental real estate on the show with all of our clients. It's an important part of building wealth, financial freedom, creating cash flow, building equity, tax deferred income. It's just a really powerful strategy. Well, when you buy rental property, the tax benefit is significant because you're going to get flow through losses from depreciation, mortgage interest, cell phones, travel, dining, entertainment, laptops, PD, all those cool little tax write-offs that come with your rental business. Because remember, folks, when you buy a rental property, you just bought a business. And that business is going to come with wonderful tax write-offs. We want to buy rental properties where we travel. We want to buy rental properties that make good economic sense. Now, with all that said, those losses are going to carry forward. Unless you're a real estate professional, and I've got some little vids and tips on real estate professional, but I just wanted to talk about those passive losses for a moment. Don't be afraid to capture those and maintain them. Be anxious to do so. They carry forward for the rest of your life. They are not something that expires. They only expire when you die. And so I get clients that ask all the time, well, I make too much money, so buying rentals don't give me a tax write-off. Oh, they will. Track all those little write-offs. Make the kids go out and change the tires on your car so that you can drive to your rental property and check on it. That is a valid expense. So I want to make sure that we are getting good write-offs. We're capturing. We're carrying those forward. And we're gonna use those on a regular basis. So rental property losses are a great carry forward that you can deduct against the sale of any rental property in the future. Capture them, keep them. They're a warm blanket, and they're an important part of a tax plan.
Yeah,
there you go, Matt.
I love it. I mean, you want to have a storage, you know. 3-year storage of passive losses, right, for future use, because you know the tax man does come eventually.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's we move on and introduce our guest here.
Yes, I'm excited about our topic today. Jaron Bergeson has been a regular guest on our show. He actually went to college to be a radio broadcaster in sports. Of course, he's living vicariously through his frequent visits to our show, but he also is in our office as an attorney helping clients around the country and is licensed to file trademarks with the Patent and Trademark Office out of Washington, D.C. He's skilled at this. He advises clients at this on a regular basis, so we're grateful to have him with us, and so let's bring him out. Hey, so Jaron, can you hear us? Are you there?
I'm here. Great to be with you guys. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thank you so much. And for those regular listeners, actually, Jaron gave us a little tip last week. And I can't remember, Jaron, did you give a copyright tip recently? I think you did, didn't you?
I may have. Last time was the disaster stuff and warranty of habitability, but I may have done that recently.
Yeah, no. Well, you're giving so many tips to people around the country, it's hard to keep track.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Jaron's a generous tipper. You know, every server knows that.
That's right. Here at the Chili's here in town, they know that.
Yeah. There you go. Well, they have great chips and salsa. I'll give them that. Yeah. So, well, Jaron, thanks for being with us. And we're excited to talk about this intellectual property topic. We already introduced it as, for those in the know, IP, intellectual property. And I want to put this in context for everybody first. Would you mind just giving us a general explanation of where trademarks fit in relationship to copyrights and patents? Just kind of, and then we're going to zoom in on trademarks today, of course, but just kind of put it in perspective so people can go, oh, that's what a trademark is.
Yeah. One way I like to talk about it is in context of a football game that's on TV. The game itself is copyrighted by the NFL, the broadcast of the game that's on NBC or CBS. That's a copyrighted broadcast of the NFL.
Not to be used without their express written permission.
Right. Without the express written consent of the National Football League, you can't redistribute it. So that the broadcast is copyrighted. The logos on the helmets of the Denver Broncos and the Los Angeles Chargers in the Monday night game, those logos and the NFL shield that's in the middle of the field, those are trademarked logos of the NFL and of the individual teams. Those are images that those teams and that the league itself uses to advertise the game itself, advertise and put on apparel, put on all kinds of products. So that identifies that team or the league itself as the source of those products or of those services.
Okay,
so
go ahead. That's the trademark, which they've invested in those logos, so they want to protect them. Okay.
Right.
So we'll come back to that. Man, is there anything in the NFL that's patented?
You know, there may be. I doubt it.
I'm sure. Maybe the cleats or some of the equipment. Some patents. Yeah.
That's really good, Matt.
Probably the technology, especially in helmets these days, would be patented. That's an invention. The way that those helmets protect people's heads or necks or shoulder pads, that product, that invention is novel, is new, it's different than something else. So that would be patented. That's a good one, Matt, in a football game.
Yeah, I wonder if Peyton Manning has patented his play calling, you know, Omaha.
That would be a trademark.
Now, hold on. Weren't you talking about who was it that trademarked one of their NFL mannerisms or acronyms? What was it? You were telling me about it the other day. Do you remember?
Well, I know. I think Peyton Manning did try to do that. I think.
Did he really?
Yeah. I Colin Kaepernick may have done something. I can't remember what he did back in the day. And I know in the sports world, when the Los Angeles Lakers in the late 80s were getting ready to win, they thought, their third championship in a row, Pat Riley, who was the coach of the Lakers, actually at that time trademarked the term three-peat because they thought they were going to win their third championship in a row to put on T-shirts and so forth at that time. So yeah. That's an interesting.
And he jinxed it.
They didn't win.
If you guys couldn't tell, Jerem's a sports fan also. let's go through this. So let's talk about trademark here. And, you know, you got the NFL shield on the football field. So because the NFL has that shield, or, you know, because the Denver Broncos have their, you know, their name and their logo possibly too, also part of that trademark, that prevents me from putting on a game and painting the NFL on the field and, throwing on some Denver Broncos helmets, right? I mean, they could come and say, nah, you can go play football, but you aren't putting our name and brand on it.
Right. As to the products and services that the NFL or the Denver Broncos football club provides, no one else can use a logo that is the same or is confusingly similar for a similar type of good or service. So, right, some other rival league couldn't put the NFL logo on the field and throw on NFL jerseys that look exactly the same and say, this is our NFL E or whatever, you know, game, because that would be confusingly similar. So yeah. It's protecting those images, that name, the National Football League, the Denver Broncos, the visual images that they use during the games to indicate that the source of this game, the source of this T-shirt or hat is the National Football League. They use those names, those images to protect or to advertise or to show the source of those goods or services. So no one else can do that.
Okay. Now let's bring this back to Main Street for a minute. Cause I, you know, the NFL and its billion or trillion dollar business, you know, for right. soon to be, is hard to sometimes wrap our heads around. And I like the word Matt used, branding, because that's really what we're trying to do with the trademark is, I think, protect the brand. What are we trying to invest in? Excuse me. I was thinking of a little business right around the corner from our office here on Main Street is called Cocoa Bean. I'm giving a little free plug here, but they're a little coffee shop and they went with the name Cocoa Bean. And so that if I were them, I would recommend that they would trademark that. You know, they're going to be putting that little image all over town. They're going to try to get people to come to their place rather than Starbucks. And who knows, maybe it is the next, you know, Seattle Best Coffee or, you know, Starbucks or whatever. And they want to trademark that image, Cocoa Bean. So I think for the average small business owner, this is something that is realistic. Jeremy, do you have any examples of a small business owner that recently wanted to protect their brand or their image as they were starting to expand and invest in that? Any examples that you might have?
Yeah, and that's really what it is. You don't want somebody else to be able to use that similar name or that similar logo to sell the same products you are and to basically play off the goodwill that you are building, hopefully, in your business. I can think of one recently that I've done for a line of little boys' clothing called Littlest Prince Couture is the name that they trademarked. And she's got a website. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's catchy. I could spell that tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. But little boy breeches couture. What? Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
So. Dude, hey, Mark has no fashion sense. It's French, that's bro. Right. You know, that's like a French word.
Couture. Yeah. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Did you say croissant or couture? Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Whatever. Anyway, keep it going.
Anyway, that name was important to them and the logo not so much. So we filed a trademark so that no one else can sell boys' clothing or apparel or maybe even men's apparel under that name or something confusingly similar to it. We actually sent a cease and desist letter on their behalf to somebody called The Littlest Prince that was selling not the exact same clothes, but the same sort of product, little boys' clothing under the name The Littlest Prince. And because we'd already filed the trademark application and because our client had been using it for longer, we kind of had this stick to beat them over the head with to say, you've got to stop. You've got to change your name because we have the rights to that. And that's way too close.
And that's really the value of the trademark is if you've established that name first, you file your trademark with the USPTO, and we're going to go through that process here in a minute. But you have priority and you have a right to use that name over anyone else. And because, you know, the concept is we want to be able to invest in that name and know it's for us. And someone's not just going to go steal the name and all the goodwill we've put into it and the money to market it to go, you know, sell a knockoff essentially of whatever product we have. And so that's the value of the trademark is – as Jeremy said, the lawyer can go beat them over the head if someone's trying to unfairly use your trademark. And let's go back to the Main Street. I love the example that Mark gave of Cocoa Bean. Let's say though, you know, I'm this coffee shop on Main Street, and but let's say there's a Cocoa Bean coffee in Columbus, Ohio, you know. And they're operating there. There's, you know, there's a small shop just like I may be on, you know, Main Street in Idaho.
Minding my own business.
Right. You know, minding my own business. And what do we do? What if they want to still file a trademark? Can I file a trademark? Am I restricted? Do those people still get to keep doing and operating under their name where they're already at? How does that work?
Yeah. So generally speaking, so if you've got the same name as them and maybe they've been doing the same thing, Cocoa Bean in Columbus, Ohio, and maybe they've been doing it even longer than you have in that area. But let's say you're the first there in Rexburg to go file and be granted a trademark for that name. What you can do with that trademark is go and basically limit be at Cocoa Bean in Columbus, Ohio. The Cocoa Bean folks in Columbus, Ohio are going to be able to continue to use their mark in Columbus, Ohio, and wherever they were using it that predated your use. But you get to put a fence around them, basically. And they're not going to be able to go outside of where they were operating in before you started using the name and before you got your trademark. So you get to hem them in. They have common law trademark rights in that area, but you've got the national trademark rights because you filed with the and got a registration from the USPTO.
Yeah,
so you get to hem them in.
Okay. Now, what happens if they're an Ohio State Buckeye fan? Can I hit them over the head with a heavier stick if I want? I'm just saying, because I'm not a fan.
Of any team coached by Urban Meyer, yes, you can do that.
Come on, I'm an Urban Meyer fan. All right, sorry. We don't want to go down the sports path again.
No, I'll stop right there.
Yeah.
All right. Now, here's the thing. Now, let me ask this too. So I'm trying to protect my name, and a lot of clients ask me, do I really need to do this? You know, is it in my best interest? Now, I think it really comes down to the scope of where you're headed with your marketing. If Cocoa Bean's like, hey, I have no dreams to be the next Starbucks. I'm going to just stay here on this little main street and mind my own business. I'm not marketing on the web. I'm not marketing anywhere. Do I really need to consider a trademark, Jerem? Or when do you think people need to consider it when they're expanding or marketing?
Yeah, I think it is. If you have thoughts of expanding, if that name or that logo, you're just in love with it and you really want to make sure no one else anywhere in the country, you know, unless their use predates yours, can use that name or that logo to advertise their products or services that are similar to yours, I think it's worth the investment. It's not prohibitively expensive to do. And if that name or that logo has real value to you, even if the chances of you expanding are really low, I think it still can be valuable because now you know, if I do want to go somewhere, if I want to branch out, if I wanted to, you know, take the big chance and be the next big thing, I've got this intellectual property in my pocket. And maybe that will be valuable to somebody else. And at the very least, maybe someday I can sell it to the guy that does want to expand. Or I want to sell my business to somebody that does want to expand it. That trademark is intellectual property that will increase the value of your business in a sale.
Yeah. Love it. Let's talk about, you know, what if you have just a generic name? You know, I mean, Cocoa Bean Coffee might be unique enough to get a trademark for, but what if I'm just like Hot Coffee, you know? I mean, what if I'm just a really generic name of my business? I don't know.
Maybe was that maybe, a dumb one? Maybe you're no, I love it. I just thought of maybe you're the best coffee in the world.
Yeah. World's best coffee.
World's best coffee. That's right. And you want to congratulate them.
Yes.
Congratulations.
You did it, guys.
World's best coffee. Little shout out to Elf. I got another movie in here. You know, now I don't say I'm going to put Elf on our movie list, but for
maybe
those
during the holidays, you know, we'll throw it in.
Maybe Christmas movie connoisseurs. Okay, so anyway,
back to my question. Yeah, all right,
yeah.
Kohler,
what are we talking about? We have a question here.
The generic name. What if I just got like, you know, the generic name, the Hot Coffee name? I trademark that?
Yeah, like Main Street Coffee. You know, or something like that. No, you can't get a trademark for a name that is either generic or that is primarily descriptive of the goods or services that you're trying to sell. Mm-hmm. So no, Main Street Coffee, that's just a location and coffee. No, Hot Coffee, that's just describing the coffee. No.
Yeah.
Those sorts of generic names can't be, or descriptive, merely descriptive names.
And that makes sense because the purpose of the trademark is you're creating a unique brand and or slogan or whatever it may be, and you're putting money and investment into it. If I'm just calling it Hot Coffee, they can't restrict other people from saying Hot Coffee. You know, I mean,
right.
The government, you know, that's not the purpose of it. So,
and there's always kind of this competition in people's heads when they're trying to come up with a name for their business or their product. And it's a legitimate competition between, I want to name it something that people will know what the heck it is I'm selling, versus I want a name that's distinguishable and that I can get a trademark for and that can be my own property. So you do have to strike a balance. But before Apple, nobody would have associated Apple with computers. And now they do. And that's a hugely valuable part of their business is the name and the logo Apple for computers and phones and so forth.
Yeah, but if you were selling fruit and you wanted to name your company Apple, you wouldn't have got it. If you were selling apples, you couldn't have got it.
Right. The orchard that's called Apple, probably not going to work.
Wow. Well, and I just realized my role in the radio show is obviously to bring up any sort of topic that will digress or divert us from the topic at hand while Matt just drives the conversation. That was a scary realization. Yeah, maybe I'm called the color commentary where I just kind of
Mark's color bring commentary up some, this week.
Maybe it's just this week, but I'm feeling very self-conscious now.
What about Matt, Ohio State? What if it's
because Matt's calling me out here, man. Twice I've diverted us from the topic. I feel really bad. So I want to apologize to you listeners out there. Some of you may not appreciate it. You're like, just stay focused, Mark.
We balance each other out sometimes, you know. Sometimes I'm a goofball. You never know.
Yeah. Well, let's talk cost here. How much does it cost, Jeremy? Is this expensive?
Well, for us, obviously, I help folks with trademark applications here. And our fee to do a trademark application, if we're just doing the name, and not a logo as well. Our fee to do that is $750 plus USPTO filing fees. And USPTO filing fees are $225 per class of goods or services that we're filing for. So usually $225 to maybe $450 in filing fees. If we're going to do a logo and the name at the same time, that's more work on the application, takes more time. Our fee to do that is then $1,000 plus USPTO filing fees.
Okay. Not too bad. And is it expensive to renew? When do I renew? Every year, 2 years? How much does it cost to keep it?
I would point everybody to a newsletter article, a blog article I wrote about a year ago on this. But it's you have to do some renewals at the five-year period. Or you can file some documents. You for sure have to renew at the 10-year mark and then every 10 years thereafter.
That's not bad. Okay.
Yeah. Now on the logo, so that's one last distinction I want to make. So I can trademark the name, you know, like Pepsi, for example, but I can also trademark that cool red, white, and blue little, I don't know what the heck they call it.
That
little image,
globe.
You know, that's part of it.
It's a globe?
Oh, yeah, that's what they call it, Pepsi Globe.
I learned something new today.
Yeah, you can do both. And if your logo doesn't include the name, then that's two applications. And so we're at $750 for each one, or maybe we could discount it for doing two. But if the logo includes the name or is just a cool version of the name with colors and stylized lettering or so something like that, then we can do it all in one application and we up the price from $750 to $1,000.
Now, I just had a thought here too, Jeremy, and I want to bring this up because I talk about this with clients, and I think there's kind of a yin and a yang or a variety of things to consider in this process. For example, clients that are going on the web, I think the trademark becomes more critical because you're obviously not staying local. You're really going to try to take a major web presence. Then the trademark becomes important. But then so does the URL. So, and maybe the company registration at the state level. So maybe I can get the state name because no one else in Idaho or Arizona or New Jersey has my company name, but then it's taken at the trademark level. But then I go to the URL. Oh, and the URL doesn't work for me. Oh, I mean, it's really something you want to do in concert. Is that a fair statement? How do you advise clients on the URL, the company name, the logo, the trademark? Really, you should be thinking about all three or four things at the same time.
Yeah, because you want them to work together. So yeah, you want to find a name that you can trademark, that there's a URL available, and that you can get the name at the state level. Some people will say, well, why don't if I just get my name, my company name, at the state level, am I okay? No, all that means is no one else can register a business with that name in that particular state. Well, I've got the URL. Do I really need a trademark? Well, the URL is great, But without the trademark, you can't keep somebody else from using that name, maybe under a different URL, to advertise their products and to promote their products. Mm-hmm. So if you can get all three, that's kind of the trifecta, and it's going to give you the most protection.
All right. So, Jerem, how long does the process take when they, you know, from coming to you? What do I need to have? Do I need to be using this yet? Can it be like, this is my business I want to do? Do I have to already be using the name? Where do I go in that process?
So to get the registration, you have to be using the name. But that's to get the registration. To file, you can file under what's called an intent to use application, where you say, I have a bona fide intent to use this name. I'm going to use it. And they will give you a kind of what it's not really called this, but a provisional registration. And then you have 6 months from that date to show them that you're actually using it. And you can extend that 6 months five more times for a total of 36 months. So you have basically up to 3 years to actually show that you're using the name or the logo in interstate commerce. If you don't show within that 36 months, then the mark is considered to be abandoned and you lose it. So no, you don't have to be using it to file an application, but to actually get the registration, yes, you do.
Gosh, fascinating. Well, learn something new every day. This was informative for me. I love this. And I think I just love small business. I got to just, you know, give my plug again to that American Dream Main Street option that we just have in this incredible country we live in, that I can think of a name, think of a company, think of a business. I can protect it. I can build it. I can sell it. I was that lemonade stand kid. And I just think this is all part of it. I just love it. I love the show, and I'm grateful for all of you listeners that put up with my dumb jokes and Matt's boring topics. But other than that, I mean, it's really a great show. But
I can get through those too.
Oh, sorry. Were you listening? Okay.
Sorry. I'm still here.
Okay. Sorry about that. Well, Jerem, what any final advice for the budding business owner, and they bump into this word trademark? Any final tips?
I think just do your research, know what it is that you're going to want in terms of a copyright or a trademark or a patent, and go after it. Don't be afraid to tackle this issue and to maybe, you know, spend a little bit of money getting some advice, because it can be hugely worthwhile down the road.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jerem. Thanks so much. And speaking of it, you know, those of you who can suffer through, you know, Mark and I and our inadequacies here, that you can, despite that, give us a 5-star review on iTunes, like Nick did on August 22nd. He says, the title says it all. He says, this is the most informative podcast on iTunes for business owners or entrepreneurs looking to start their own business. Mark and Matt are extremely informative and very knowledgeable on the subject matter. I can't wait to hear both of their books. So
what are we going to pay him for that? That was awesome.
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe some cocoa bean coffee. I don't know.
maybe a free book.
Exactly. Maybe a free book. That's worth a free book.
We'll give him a free book.
So anybody who gives us a 5-star review, throw it up there. Send Mark or I an email, mark@kqslawyers.com or matt@kqslawyers.com, and let us know your address and which book you want. Matt's great book, The Self-Directed IRA Handbook, or one of Mark's other books. And
I'm still here too.
Yes. And we will ship it to you. No, you know, there's no shipping. We send it to you. It's a good deal. We've got 134 5-star reviews. I haven't checked for a while. We've just been racking them up.
Yeah, I'm so grateful, really. And thanks, everybody, for your kind comments. We get an email here and there, of course, from you listeners, and we appreciate it. So please keep listening. Share the podcast with others. And Jerem, thanks for being with us today. We appreciate your insights and the time you took to be with us. And good luck in your NFL pool. And thanks to all of you, our regular listeners. We hope to be with you next week for our open forum show. We'll be next week. So make sure if you have a question, this is a live broadcast. We'd love you to listen live. You can call in from your phone, listen from your computer, and give comments and ask questions. And we'll be here with you live next week. So thanks, everyone. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.